Welcome back to the Autoblog Podcast. I'm Greg Migliori. Joining me today for today's show is Senior Editor for All Things Green, John Snyder. What's going on, man?
Hey, glad to be back after several weeks of holidays and parental leave. Good to be back in the mix and good to be podcasting again.
Very good. Glad to have you back with one more Snyder in the fold. So
yes.
That's great, good, and happy news. So we got a great show for you guys today. Lots of news. We'll run through a bunch of things here, including things on Stellantis, looking at some of GM's green plans from CES. Lots of electric car news about a potential Lincoln Corsair, an electric M car, and perhaps an electric Mustang. All electric by 2028. We'll talk about if we think that's going to actually happen. We'll also talk about the cars we've been driving. It's a very, very luxury, very nice segment here. John spent some time in the Maybach GLS, the Mercedes Maybach GLS. Beautiful SUV. Can't wait to hear about that. You're laughing. Pretty expensive,
it's,
obviously. It's, pretty eye-catching.
It's over the top. Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll get to that.
Cool. Yeah, we'll get to that. And then a couple other luxury cars, the Audi A4, and then a long-term update. John said farewell to the Volvo S60, and I took delivery of the Acura TLX. So a couple of premium sedans coming and going from our fleet. So why don't we jump right into what we've been driving. Since the Maybach gets a chuckle, I like the GLS. The last time I drove one, it was not in Maybach trim, actually. This, I believe, is our first crack at the Maybach. But to me, it made a lot of sense. Mercedes had a lot of, there was some room at that part of the lineup for them to, you know, get in there, get into that segment. And I think it looks like it's doing the job. But of course, you layer on the Maybach dressings, and suddenly you've got something that's even a little bit more decadent, it sounds like.
Yeah, decadent is definitely the word for it. And it's funny because, I mean, this is more of a car that you would want to be driven in than you want to drive, maybe. Not saying the GLS is bad to drive, and it's not. It's actually quite nice to drive. And the Maybach version is no exception. Ample power. You know, it's got the twin turbo V8. But this one, the back seat is just absolutely decked out. You know, there's beautiful seating, beautiful lighting everywhere. This has two really fancy rear seats that have massage functions, a little leg rest that comes up. In between the two seats is a refrigerator that sort of takes up some of the cargo space in the back. But there's a little refrigerator, and specifically for champagne. It has these little divots to hold the champagne bottles in place, and the lid, when you open it, pops down, and it's this sort of velvet wine glass holder, like champagne flute holder. And the cup holders have these little clips, so you can clip your little champagne glass down into the base, and it'll hold on to it and keep it from falling over. But the only person who really spent much time back there while the car was in motion was my son Wally. So it was the car was a big hit when I was dropping him off at school. This one was a two-tone, like this silver on top and sort of an almost a navy blue down below. it definitely caught attention. Even though, you know, it's shaped mostly like a regular GLS, the two-tone nature of it sort of gives it a little bit different of a profile almost. The color breaks up the body. And then, you know, there's the three-pointed star hood ornament sticking up. It's not just a flat one. And then, you know, Maybach badges here and there. It's not too flashy from the outside, which is nice, but you get inside and wow, it is, you know, it's something else. But yeah, Wally quite enjoyed spending time back there. And I spent some time back there just in the driveway and checking it out, and it was really comfortable. You know, heated armrests, all that sort of stuff. And even a little Samsung small sort of tablet that you can use to control the screen up front when the car is not in motion. So a little, you know, theater type feeling back there as well.
Pretty cool. Pretty cool. I missed it right off the top. Did you say it actually came with the champagne flutes, or do you have to provide your own?
No. Okay. You have to provide your own, and I and mine are, that I have are too tall to fit in there. But I did try and put some in there. Didn't do any drinking back there, but this is definitely something that you would send to pick up clients, you know, that you really want to impress, or if maybe you have a high end. You know, B&B at a vineyard or something, and you want to shuttle your guests around on a wine tour or something. That would be the perfect vehicle for that. But yeah, it's definitely the back seat is where you want to be in the Maybach.
Very cool. The last time I drove a Maybach, and it's been quite some time at this point, it actually came with I guess silver champagne flutes. Silver seems okay. Like material that's maybe entirely too malleable. Maybe they were chrome with like silver on the inside. And I mean, it was just like, I think we actually made a video with it too. And we were sipping LaCroix back there. And and then I was thinking to myself, this is kind of gross because who knows if these champagne flutes have been cleaned. The LaCroix tasted kind of metallic. So I couldn't tell you how the car drove, but you know, the flutes are what stuck out with me. They reminded me of like almost like chalices, you know. But yeah, that's a cool car. And you know, it's interesting. I really think this is a smart move for Mercedes to have Maybach be like within the company now. Mm-hmm. It's not like its own like, oh, we're bringing back Maybach, this brand that you probably never heard of from 100 years ago. We're going to make two of them. They're going to cost more than most people's houses, and so it goes. Instead, they're making it like this, like Uber level on top of everything else. It's like the cherry on top of everything. And, you know, I think if you like, you are in the market for, if you will, that's a funny thing to say. If you're in the market for a super luxury thing like this, you know what Maybach is. And you mm-hmm. probably don't care that it's not like an independent brand or sub brand, anything like that. It's just, you know, I mean, we could call it a sub brand, but you know, it's a glorified trim that I think is glorified, rightfully so. That's cool.
Yeah.
With this limousine?
Not really. Nothing really fun. Just take a Wally to school a lot and running some errands.
Yeah.
that's pretty much it. I did just try and take it out for some extended drives, but honestly, there's not really much else to learn from driving it compared to the standard GLS. It's really about just sitting there and soaking in the interior and the luxury and appreciating it, you know, checking out the little, it comes with its own little throw pillows in the back seats and stuff like that. But I was kind of surprised. I expected this to be well over $200,000. It was $190,000, and 700. So, sort of reasonable for a Maybach GLS. reasonable being a relative term. But yeah, it was pretty fun. Definitely got lots of looks, especially from the other parents at Wally's kindergarten, and the teachers. Yeah, there's one of the teachers who helps out in drop off is a car dude. So he's always, you know, while he's hopping out of the car, he's always, you know, asking questions about it from a distance. And yeah, it's always fun to drop him off, and people are always excited to see what sort of wild thing Wally's going to come to school. And this one was probably the biggest treat since the Corvette convertible.
Very nice. Very nice. One of the things I miss about just, you know, being out there more often is watching the reactions to different, like, you know, drop-offs. And then the other thing that's really fun about press cars is people are utterly baffled how you could show up one day in a Maybach and then the next day in a Corvette convertible. Like, what's going on?
The next day in a Nissan Versa.
Right. Or a Nissan Kicks or something. Yeah, no, it's fun. You know, the Maybach, driving cars like that, it's fun. It's supposed to be fun. You know, it's very Gatsbyan, if you will.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I'll say this too. I really like the GLS. I think there's a little bit of controversy with that because, you know, Mercedes, the top of their like SUV lineup, there was some room in there and they did a good job filling it, you know?
And I love the GLS. And so does my wife, Kat. You know, if it weren't so darn expensive, that would be the top of her list of cars that she would get. But when this one rolled up in the driveway, I hadn't seen it yet, but she was yelling, "They ruined it! They ruined it!" She hated that two-tone paint job. but the GLS in general, I think, is a very nice vehicle to drive. You know, I like Mercedes interiors nowadays, and I think the driving dynamics of their crossovers and SUVs has improved quite a bit in these newest generations too. When the GLS is no exception, and there's a lot of cool technology available in it. Some of that off-road technology, that curve technology, and then of course all the M-Box and infotainment and driver assistance technologies that all work very well. It's a very advanced lineup, and the GLS sits atop of it.
I would put it ahead of like the X7 right now, the Q.
I would too.
Q7, Q8. I mean, I just stem to stern, their interiors. I think all the Mercedes stuff just works. You know, some of the other companies, it's either overly simplified or it's like way too confusing. Mercedes, I think, strikes the right balance.
And, you know, like I said,
their interiors are great.
Yeah, they're sort of, I don't know, maybe in danger of going a little bit past that line to where they're, you know, too complicated and there's too many features. Like some of these, you know, active workout features where the seat adjusts to, you know, that you don't even really know what it does, you know, and these activating, energizing comfort things where, you know, it sets a mood and has aromas and you know, you don't need all that. Nobody does. I mean, most people, you know, would take those aromas out. But I mean, Mercedes has been doing well with so many things they're hitting a good stride. I just hope they don't, you know, try and take it that step too far, or they have to start dialing it back then in the next generation. But you know, it is what it is, and I can't complain right now.
Last thing I'll say about this is I do think Mercedes massages are the best in the industry. They have different settings, including like, I think hot stone and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And it's a good feature. Like I've actually long advocated that like minivans should offer them, you know, just because, hey, you know, if you're a parent, you might want a nice like massage while you're driving your minivan. I mean,
yeah, well, your
really anybody
screaming
might want
back.
A nice massage.
Yeah. Yeah, those stressful drives, right. Anything you can do to lower the blood pressure a little when your kids are fighting over a Nintendo Switch or whatever. Yeah, I think, yeah, that's a good idea for minivans, for sure. They're expensive enough anyways. You know, the minivans are getting more and more expensive, you know, at the top end. Why not, you know, make them luxury, you know, parent mobiles. Focus on the parent a little bit.
Yeah, I gotta think the tech isn't like that prohibitively expensive, right? I mean, it's just like a, you know, some mechanical things and components in the chair itself. You know, hey, why not? So, all right, let's talk about this A4 that you you've been driving. What kind of trim? What were we talking about here? What was under the hood? What'd you think?
Well, it's the 2021 A4 S-Line 45 TFSI Quattro. You know, 2 liter i4 turbo all-wheel drive. It's been really nice in this snow that we've been getting. This, you know, we've been getting this light dusting over sort of this over a layer of freezing rain, so it's been a little bit hairy driving some of these early mornings, and this thing is pretty good in them. The all-wheel drive and stability are, you know, well dialed in, so you don't even really notice stuff going on. But after getting out of the Volvo and then into this, you know, I had that S60 for you know, a month or two while I was on parental leave, and then, you know, get into the GLS and then into the A4. You know, compared to that Volvo, this just feels so crisp, and I don't know, the drive is, it's more mechanical, it's more dialed in, and it reminds me of, you know, some of the nuances that I enjoyed when we had the long-term A4s that we were rotating through at our fleet. They can be really good, entertaining driver's cars when you want them to be. And then they can be very sedate, comfortable, you know, family sedans when you want them to be too, you know, with a flip of a drive mode button and, you know, start using the paddle shifters and have a good time. Very capable, very, you know, it's potent, it, but not, you know, overly so. It's a really good amount of power where, yeah, it's still totally drivable, in all weather, but really, really fun. And, you know, it just feels so, I've said this before about the A4, it just feels so architectural. And Volvo does this too, to an extent. Volvo's probably the other brand that I think has this sort of design mentality that sort of brings in a lot of, you know, geometry and simplicity and yeah, architecture. Basically, it looks like, you know, modern architecture, and it's very clean. It's very, you know, simple. And easy to use. Everything's where you want it to be. It's refreshing to get back into the A4 and drive it around and have some fun with it.
Yeah, the A4 has always, I think, been, you know, the last generation, I think it still retains some of that, like, simplistic, pure Audi, like, you know, just really that sporting feel that you want from them. The car itself, to me, I feel like it's gotten a little more technical, a little more aggressive with the design. In some ways, I miss that. It's the same way with the 3 and the 5 series, specifically with BMW. I feel like they've gotten a little overwrought. Yeah. You know, I mean, some people might like this, and obviously time moves on. This is where the market is. Like, a simple, clean design, no tech isn't really what anybody's looking for. But I just remember, like, the A4 circa 2010, in that generation, to me, that car really captured what Audi was trying to do. And I feel like some of the additional things, specifically probably the design, it feels like it's gotten a little bit, like, heavy to me. Not literally heavy, but it just feels like there's way more going on than there used to be. So, I mean, that's, you know, I guess that is what it is, but I mean, I do go ahead.
It definitely seems to creep into the, you know, this current generation of cars. There's always, I mean, you know, they'll redo their lineup with the new design mentality. This isn't just Audi, this is everyone. And then little things creep in and sort of, I don't know, break it apart and make it less of a cohesive, feel to it, and then they have to, you know, then they give it a redesign. But yeah, things are definitely starting to creep into the fold here to maybe break up some of that cleanness. There's some of the textures in the car and outside, you know, some of the, you know, looking at the grill, there's more going on there, and but I don't know, it still feels pretty slick, and especially the interfaces, the user interfaces, the buttons, the controls, everything in the Audi is very neat and clean and tidy and easy to use, and you don't have to hunt around for things, and and you don't have to hunt through menus either. And that's another thing about the Volvo is that user interface, just lots of hunting and swiping through menus and poking through different modules to try and find what you're looking to do. In the Audi, it's much more straightforward.
I think it's interesting too that like Audi has taken this tactic of trying to, they do a lot of different things with just like who they are, it's like it's sporting, it's tech, it's design. I feel like they're a little more aggressive and ambitious with just like who they are as a brand, which is good. I like that. Anything special with the A4 or just commuting and,
not yet. I might do something fun with it this weekend, take it for a long drive or something. Nice. But again, so far it's been just taking the long way to school, dropping Wally off and picking him up, just spending some. Like I said, it's just nice to get this out on some of the curvier roads where the speed limit's a little higher, and just let it stretch its legs a little. Because it really does a good job of working with the driver. The responses are to every input are very precise, and it just feels nice.
Nice. Well, how about we talk, stay in the premium sedan segment here. Why don't we first say goodbye to our Volvo S60? We'll probably talk about it a little more on the podcast, but you were the last person who drove the S60? It arrived exactly this time a year ago. I think I may have been the first person to even drive it. I remember driving it. It was a plug-in, which we were all super excited about. I don't think we all got quite as much, we didn't get to trade and drive it as much as we would have liked. So it goes. But I'm curious, final thoughts, where would you rate this in the pantheon of Autoblog long-termers?
Kind of in the middle, I guess. I enjoyed it. I definitely like that it's a plug-in hybrid, especially toward the end there. Driving it in the winter, being able to do my daily driving for a month without having to go to the gas station. Plug it in when I get home, just keep the, had the cord plugged into my porch, just the regular 110 volt, mobile charger. And I just plug it in when I get home. And then it was, if I was picking Wally up at lunchtime, it was, had maybe a quarter of the charge. Otherwise it was fully charged in the morning. And it was nice. I did end up using more gas in the winter simply because I needed to use the all-wheel drive more. That's sort of one of the quirky things about the Volvo plug-in hybrid powertrain is the gas engine drives the front wheels, the electric motor drives the rear wheels. So if you want all-wheel drive, or even front wheel drive, you have to use the gas engine. So when there was a lot of snow on the ground, it was slippery. I would have to, use more gas just because of, I wanted more traction. When the roads were dry, it was nice not to have to get out in the cold and freeze my butt off at the gas station. But I was still figuring some things out with this car, even toward the end. I was still struggling with that infotainment, just finding things, figuring out where things, like trying to switch from, you know, Bluetooth to the radio, you know, or simple things like that. It's just wasn't easy. And, you know, I was having some issues with the CarPlay when I was trying to use that. The connection kept, you know, depending on the cord. It didn't seem to depend on the cord, but having some connection issues with that going in and out. And then some weird electrical gremlins. There was like 2 days where I had all these alerts that stability control and ABS and the airbags were all not working. But then when I got in the car later that day, it was fine. So I just had all these notices at random, just for a couple of days, and they went away. So that was interesting. And that's something I'll address in my wrap up. But this was like the week before it was leaving, and it fixed itself. I didn't, you know, bother to take it in. Didn't really have time to take it in. It would just been gone.
Glad to hear about these issues now that the car is gone.
Yeah. Overall, I enjoyed the car. Especially, you know, I was really surprised with how the personality could change from EV mode to performance mode. This thing could really scoot when you have it in full dynamic mode. It was pretty fast. That the engine doesn't really sound great, and the gears are a little bit slushy, maybe. But it still was quick and calm and composed and pretty fun.
I was just revisiting a post I wrote almost a year ago, 5 quick thoughts on the S60. And it's just interesting to kind of look at this through like the long lens of history, you know, how it held up. I only drove it actually a few times after this, because looking at the date, it was February 10th, and then, you know, pandemic really ramped up in March. And again, we didn't trade this car very much. But I would concur with you a lot on the drive modes. I thought that was, the modes were distinctive. You could make it as green as you wanted it to be, which I did, quite frankly. Like you, I'm not super excited to freeze my tail off at a gas pump. So yeah, I mean, this car, you know, could definitely sip fuel if you wanted it to. But I also, another thing I wrote that I think this is kind of interesting, and I still stand by this, is it does feel like there's a lot going on here. Arguably, I think maybe too much. It's turbocharged and supercharged. I don't know anybody else who does that, but Volvo's been doing that for the better part of a decade.
Volkswagen used to do that.
Yeah. I mean, we should be kind of a good trivia post here. You know, who has tried this crazy technique? I'll say this, it's only good, if you will. You know, you get like the supercharger kind of kicks on like at the low end before the turbo like fully spools up, and then away you go. Of course, you've got electrification kind of in there as well, which to me, that makes maybe the supercharging superfluous, if you will. But I mean, whatever, do it. And a supercharger doesn't have that much weight and complexity, but it's a lot of stuff going on there that all needs to work well. So,
right. And definitely, like, once you understand how the electrification works, you know, the engine up front, motor in the back. And, once you understand that that's what's actually going on, that you don't have this all working at the same time, you know, you can use it better. You have to think about it, though. I mean, you have to think like, oh, you know, I want all-wheel drive. I'm gonna have to use more gas. Or, oh, if I wanna sip fuel, I'm gonna not be able to have the front wheels motivated at this time. But once you know that, you know, once that's sunk in, It's actually kind of neat. It's kind of a thinking man's all-wheel drive car, but you know, it takes a while for, I mean, it's easy to understand, but it takes a while for it to sink in, that so that you can sort of use the car in the smartest way.
For sure. I think that's a good way to put it too. Whenever I have driven Volvos lately, that have this type of mode, like selector, if you will, I'm always thinking about it. It's like, what do I want to do? Do I want to go fast? Do I want to try and, you know, just go in EV mode if I can and conditions allow? With Volvos, I'm always thinking, and I like that. You know, I think if I were going to be a Volvo owner, that would, it might not make me buy it, but if I did, I'd be like, I'm glad I have it, that sort of thing.
Yeah. So it's not something that's going to get people out buying it, especially, you know, regular consumers, but it's something that the enthusiast may not seek out, but will definitely come to appreciate after living with the car for some time. You know, it's one of those quirks where it makes you fall in love with a certain car.
I think you probably spent some more time in it than I did, but I for sure give it high marks for the interior.
Yes.
The exterior. That, mm-hmm. I mean, I was talking about the A4, how there's a lot going on. S60, they get it right. It's clean. The headlights, the taillights, there's just some extra like styling cues that are a little bit like stand out. But to me, it's just like the perfect balance. Sort of like just very in good taste, but also it looks expensive, you know? And that's, I think, a hard balance to achieve. So high marks for that. I guess if I were going to give this thing a grade, I'd probably land on like a B+ after it's in the Autoblog fleet, something like that. Ballpark.
Yeah. B+, A-.
Yeah.
I actually had a friend, a close friend of mine, go out and buy one after riding in this. He was looking for a new car. He had an older, 3 Series and, was looking to get something a little newer. So he went out and bought a couple years old S60, not the plug-in hybrid, but you know, when he liked it enough, he was like curious about it. I'm like, come over, I'll give you a ride around. And he has one, and it's pretty much the same color. So you know, he's been over a couple times, and they've been nose to nose in the driveway. It's kind of cool.
Even in the winter, I thought this car, which was kind of like a creamy white, it still looked really good. You know, it definitely held up well there. And I would say too, like B+, if I'm ballparking it, that's also like putting it in like the pantheon of Autoblog long-termers. Mm-hmm. As a car, I'd probably give it like an A-. And then when I'm just stacking it up on all the things we've had, from like that Jaguar XE to the HRV to the Ridgeline, and some of it, it's just honestly like, it's like not of the car's doing, you know, we didn't get to like trade it as much and do as much with it as perhaps other long-termers would have. But, I mean, it was very good car, very good car.
I agree with you. As a vehicle on its own in the rest of the vehicular world, A-, it's more closer to mid pack for Autoblog long-termers.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Almost like, cool. Well, we have high hopes for another sedan that we're basically replacing it with. This is the Acura TLX 2021. It's a beautiful car. I'm just getting into it. It just arrived last week. Haven't done a ton with it, but I've been able to get some seat time with it, just running around. It's fun. It's beautiful. Initial impressions are that it, you know, it's getting a lot of attention. I give it the dog walking test. If people are walking by my house with their dog, people look at it, you know? So, feels like it's going to be a pretty good value too. The one that we have is, what did I do with that Monroney? I just had it here. 47,775. Okay. And honestly, it feels more expensive than that. You know, like that Volvo was like 57 grand, I think, something like that. Which also was fair given all the, like, because the Volvo, like we mentioned, all the hybrid and other things going on. I think that was fair too. But I mean, this feels, I guess I keep going back to the term, it feels expensive, you know, like, it's got a presence, I think. And I've been meaning to write the intro for a couple of days now. I just haven't quite, between all the stuff going on, haven't had a chance to kind of like barf it out, if you will, because, you know, intros are pretty short. But for me, this is like a potential, this might be laying it on too thick, but a potential return to like greatness for Acura.
Okay.
You know, and by that I mean, I think for a while, Acuras were pretty cool.
Like, oh, yeah.
They were up there with like, Lexus always sold more, but Acuras were like in that like sort of nebulous like other like middle class of luxury cars, like nicer than Volvos. Maybe to your non-enthusiast, you might have been like an Audi, an Acura, an Infiniti, like this kind of like you start to run them all together. Not a BMW, not a Mercedes, not a Cadillac, because even if when Cadillacs are bad, I still think the name Cadillac puts them historically up there, if you will, like, you know, like even if the New York Yankees are terrible, people still think they're the Yankees. I would still put Cadillac in that, you know, bucket.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I don't know. I'm feeling good about the car and it drives really well. Actually, I'm thinking I actually did take a really good long drive with it on Sunday. And I plan to do it again.
I'm really excited to get in it. The Acura TL super handling all-wheel drive of about a decade ago was one of my favorite cars. Just such an excellent, fun, and good-looking car to drive. But you know, that had a six-speed manual too available. That was just the best. You know, Honda's manuals are great still, but. Yeah, in that Acura, it was just point and click, man. And it felt like, you know, a magic wand. It was just so, so fun to row through the gears in that car. But even the automatics have been fun. So I'm really looking forward. It's a beautiful car. I really like the lines on it. You know, the shapes, the lighting. Definitely looking forward to getting a shot in this because, yeah, it's also one of those cars that you don't see very often. You don't see a lot of people driving them, which I don't know, appeals to me.
Agreed. And I to go back to what you said about the TL, I had a flashback to driving that car roughly around 10, 11, somewhere in there, mm-hmm. and it was snowing, and I just. Oh man, that car was awesome. That gearbox was magical. That was like, I think one of the best Honda/Acura gearboxes they ever did. The clutch engagement was so light. It was perfect for a car that size.
It's one of the best transmissions to use, period. Unless you get into like, you know, gated shifters and whatnot in Ferrari. Right. But I mean, just for sort of a more everyday car. It was so snickety and perfect. I loved it.
So you want to hear what we got?
Yeah.
Looking here at I did find the Monroney. Again, it's almost 48 grand. It's the A-spec trim, which is nice. I think that's kind of cool. Under the hood, we have the 2-liter 4-cylinder. That's 272 horsepower, 10-speed automatic. It does have super handling all-wheel drive, which I went and picked up a pizza as I'm going through my errands the other night, and it was pretty sketchy out. Like, it was like kind of like this like ice rain thing, and it's on all seasons, wasn't even worried, but it was nice to have the all-wheel drive going on there too, you know. Car always stayed pretty planted, centered, all that good stuff. Let's see, a couple other things. I mean, this is standard, but it's got the dual LED headlights and taillights, which I think look awesome. I think these taillights are like right up there with the Alfa Romeo Giulia as far as really good looking taillights. The A-spec adds like the leather inside, you know, a little bit of styling on the outside. LED fog lights. You got the special wheels. I think a slightly different kind of all-season tires. 19-inch alloy wheels, ventilated front seats. So, you know, basically it looks the part is what A-Spec does for you. And I think this car looks great. I mean, I think the lines, the proportions, the wheels, it reminds me of like when the Dodge Charger came back and people were just like lost their minds because we didn't have any kind of rear-wheel drive performance for years. And then you've got this car with the dash to axle ratio that's just long, and then the back end is kind of flared. One of the best looking cars out there, I think. Like all the things I've been talking about, like with Mercedes being a little bit much and Audi being a little bit much, Acura just crushes it with the looks of this car, I think. I think they finally got their grill right. I mean, it took them 10 years, but they went away from the 1940s, like train grill, and they toned it down a little bit, and they've really gone in a new direction is what they've done. You know, it's more minimalist. The shape is still like big, but it's less like, I don't know, USS Olympia, and more just kind of like, you know, just a good clean grill, if you will, more mesh, more subtle, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I'm excited. I think you're going to like it. I think we're all going to like it. The trunk is pretty big, so I think we'll get a lot of use out of this. Like, it's definitely a car I could take up north, you know, and not be constrained. I mean, inside with, you know, three people and a dog, it's not going to be as comfy as a three-row SUV, but, right. I mean, it's definitely doable. The Volvo might not have been doable, to be perfectly honest, just even though I did take it up north as I think about it. But, you know, I'm excited. This is a nice addition to our long-term fleet. You know, another theme that I think is going to come out here, and I'd like to hear your take, is I think that the sedan is not dead. You know, I feel like, especially in the premium segment, you know, there is an appetite for cars that look and drive like this. So I think that's what we're going to try to explore this year. I think it'll be a good year with this car.
Yeah, it sort of felt for a little while there like the sedan format was being a flat line, but so far it hasn't. And you know, these great sedans keep coming out, and you know, some of them actually sell, which is great. Yeah.
I think the other thing too with Acura is they're like Cadillac kind of did it with like sedans and very few SUVs. And that didn't work for them because people don't buy sedans, all that many of them. And all they had was the Escalade and then the XT5. And, you know, they called it something else before that, the SRX. They didn't have enough crossovers. Now they're getting it right. They're getting the right balance. Acura has always had two or three SUVs and crossovers to really balance out when they want to do like two or three sedans. So I think Acura, frankly, has always had a less ambitious portfolio. They don't try to fill every single segment, you know, and I think that's smart. I don't frankly understand why some car makers, especially luxury ones, do, you know? So I think, you know, to me, this is easily the most important thing they've done since the NSX. And I think this could do more for them than the NSX, as far as like getting real people to change their perceptions of it, you know, because it's a legit nice car. It's the kind of thing that if, you know, there's some luxury cars that don't feel like they're legit luxury cars. And then there's some other cars that like a Genesis that look like luxury cars, but I do think there's still some dissonance with people who are like, I don't know, it's a Genesis. That doesn't look right. You know, or people it's just not the right brand for some people.
Yeah.
I think Acura has got a chance here to kind of really shoot the gap and be a little bit of both here. And, you know, so we'll see.
Now they just need to bring back the ZDX.
They do.
I love that.
That was awesome. Yeah. ZDX, or was it the Cross Tour? Was the Honda version of it?
Yeah.
That was pretty wild. All right. So that's the fleet. We've spent some time really dissecting the fleet. Let's run through some news here. All right. You know, just some quick hits here. Stellantis is a thing. It's officially trading. You know, a lot of different thoughts here. I've seen this graphic with just how many brands are going to be under one roof. world's fourth largest automaker, which is kind of mind-numbing. Carlos Tavares, who is formerly the CEO of a number of things, but he's going to run this whole thing. I actually met him once at the truck show in St. Louis. He was running, I think, Nissan's truck business at the time. And then he, I believe he was doing something else. I'm forgetting the stop in the middle. He sort of floated the idea that he would be a great CEO for like, oh, I'm blanking on who this was, like GM or something. Like he publicly said, hey, I'd be good at that. And then like whoever his current employer was fired him. And then he went over to Peugeot, which made a lot of sense. And now lo and behold, he's running Stellantis. Mm-hmm. So, irrespective of nothing, I think he's a very capable executive, which they're going to need to navigate this enormous transatlantic, transpacific, you know, Goliath of a company. You know, to get really like meta here, this could be the sign of things to come. It's just these like mega mergers. We've seen it in other industries. As long as the brands survive, that's all good.
I mean, you see the way that the different car companies are even just willing to work more closely together. Volkswagen and Ford, and now you know, GM will be building EVs for Hyundai. It's seeing a lot more cooperation, and I think in some cases that leads to conglomeration. It's interesting to see what the landscape will look like in 10, 15 years, but man, a lot I feel like a lot has changed in the past 5-10 years, pretty rapidly. So Stellantis, I mean, it's such a big umbrella. It'll be interesting to see what they do. It's just so many actual brands under that one roof.
I think for me, the big question is what happens to the identity of some of these very iconic companies like Peugeot in France, mm-hmm. Chrysler in the United States, Fiat in Italy. I mean, there's so much going on there. Like, I mean, these are companies that have been around to like 120 years, some of them. Like, Peugeot is one of the oldest industrial companies in the world, you know? Mm. So, you know, we'll see how it all comes together. I could easily see a brand or two getting closed. I think that will happen, frankly.
Yes.
But also others getting like spun off. You know, like if you're an investor and you've ever wanted to get in the car business, now is probably the time to take over a brand on the cheap, maybe, you know? That's never a good recipe. It never works. But, you know, maybe, I don't know. Like my guess is Lancia might be available if you've got some cash reserves, you're willing to take on some debt. And there's going to be a lot of manufacturing capacity in all of this too, probably more than is needed. You know, I think the biggest thing is will be the clash of cultures. Like in Detroit, I still hear people refer to like Ford, GM, and Chrysler as the big three. And it's very colloquial, but it's also like Chrysler hasn't really existed in about 5 years. So,
yeah,
you know, we'll see.
They've done so little.
Yeah. But so that's Stellantis. Stay tuned as Stellantis turns. We were both actually talking about some of GM's plans at CES last week. One thing I wanted to go back to, just kind of revisiting that, is that drone. That was wild. Cadillac's drone that I think could really... They didn't have any specific plans for it, but it was just like a surprise and delight thing. I saw a headline in saying at the Escalade of drones, but I don't know. CES was good for GM. I think that's the better point.
Yeah, it's interesting to see that they're really broadening their focus. I mean, they have been for a long time, but now they're doing so far more publicly. Seeing the drones, seeing the delivery services and the sort of robotics and whatnot. It's pretty interesting what they're doing. And you know, they've been around forever. They've got the know-how and the capacity to sort of take some new things on. And especially, you know, developing their own EV powertrain program that it seems to be accelerating fairly rapidly. When we were talking to, you know, Mr. Crew, the things coming down the pipeline in terms of battery technology don't seem very far off in the future. So there could be some big sort of leapfrog moments for GM here, and not maybe not just in passenger vehicles.
For sure. I think, you know, again, just to go back to CES, it seems like GM had a ton of moves. You know, we even got some teasers on the Bolt electric utility vehicles, they're now calling it. They've always called it a crossover, but it sounds like there's going to be some variants of it. But yeah, I mean, good show for GM. Perhaps more exciting is an electric M that we reported on earlier this week. Zach Palmer, road test editor, wrote it up. We're kind of thinking it might be based off of the i4, which if that's the case, I think that would be great. You know, total random note, I think the big grill works better on the electric cars than it does on the gasoline cars as I look at a picture of the i4. So we'll see. I mean, I think this would be a good move actually for M to add an all electric car, even if it is, this gets confusing, also an I car. You know, I was supposed to be kind of a sub brand in its own right. But yeah, good move, I think.
Yeah, I think so too. I think every, you know, large car company that's rolling out EVs needs to have sort of cool, sporty, really desirable car that sort of to sort of lead off with, to sort of put their best foot forward in terms of, you know, like Ford. Oh, look at this! It's part of the Mustang nameplate, and it's a performance car, and it's going to be really cool. It's not going to be some boring, you know, hippie commuter car. This is actually cool. This is who we are now. I think to do that same thing, you know, with the i4 and make an M version of it is a good move. Just to get people on board in terms of enthusiasm and just proving that you're not going about this to make boring cars. I know BMW already has the i3 is neat in its own right, but it's not this. You know, the i3 is more that that sort of hippie-ish commuter car. I mean, not really hippie. It's out there though. You know, it's far out, if you will. So yeah, this i4, the M version, whatever it ends up being called, whether it's MI4, I don't think i4M would be good. But whatever they end up calling it is, it's going to be, you know, putting a good foot forward for them.
Cool. Let's talk about more electrification. Lincoln Corsair could be electric 2026. Yeah. At least one analyst says so. I think they're going to have to be, frankly, because Cadillac's talking about being almost all electric by like that same area. So I think Lincoln better start electrifying some things. And they've sort of said they might, they will. Automotive News is one of the reports that, you know, did report this, if you will. I don't know. I think it makes a ton of sense. I think Lincoln should explore electrification.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think the Aviator plug-in hybrid is a really cool car to do. You know, it's great. but to go, you know, full EV, I think it's, yeah, they need to go that route for sure. The Corsair, you know, sort of right in the middle in terms of size is probably a good place to start if you're going to go full EV. We don't have a lot of details about it, except that they're currently calling it Corsair E. I'm sure they'll find something more, hopefully, creative than that. But yeah, it's going to be on a different platform than the current Corsair, and we're not sure if it's going to completely replace it. Yeah, looking forward to that. And this comes from an analyst called Auto Forecast Solutions, which Automotive News has cited them in the past before. I think we have a freelancer who's reaching out to them to figure out some more details on things that things that they know about that Ford is working on. But yeah, the Corsair supposedly coming in 2026 and supposedly will be built in Canada. So that should be interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. Perhaps more interesting is an electric Mustang by 2028. Same guy also is reporting this. To be clear, this is beyond the Mach-E. This is more of a like an all electric Mustang. Sounds like anyway.
And yeah, so Autoline picked this up from that same analyst. Saying December 2028, we'll get an all electric Mustang, not a Mach-E, an actual Mustang coupe. This report says that it will completely replace the internal combustion Mustang, which is partly why it's not coming. A new generation of Mustang supposedly isn't coming until then, although we've heard maybe some reports that contradict that. It's supposed to be built at Ford's Flat Rock facility, which doesn't have any EVs being built there at the time. So a lot of changes will have to go into place to get that up and running, hence 2028. It's interesting that it would replace the Mustang to me. I don't know how I feel about that. I mean, I'm all for an electric Mustang. I think that Ford should have done an electric Mustang instead of the Mach-E. I'm more on board with the Mach-E now than I was before, but I always thought that Ford should just offer an electric Mustang alongside the regular Mustang and do it now. We'll see if this actually comes to fruition, if they actually replace the current Mustang with electric only. That would be really neat. I mean, we know that electric vehicles have the chops to do it, the performance chops to be on par with that. Maybe not the same feel. People want that rumble of the V8 and the exhaust sound and maybe even the smell of the exhaust, but 2028 gives us some time to get more used to the idea of electric cars being performance machines, and we'll see.
I agree with you completely. I think great to do the Mach-E, but I think they probably should have done there's still plenty of time and room to do take the coupe, fastback, notchback, whatever you want to call it, and make an electric version of it. I think there was room to use the existing body style. Now, I do realize the Mustang is very purpose-built, in its current form. It's tough. You can't just drop an EV in there. Although it's funny how every aftermarket company has no problems doing this. But then the OEMs are no, we don't want to do that. You could drop one in a 1967 replica of Eleanor or something. But yeah, so I think that's something that should be explored, really in the near term. 2028, sure, I'm actually okay with it. I do think, and this is where I wonder where to get really big thoughts here, like, where are we going to be as an industry and even as a country at that point? Because if the Mustang is all electric, does that mean there's no internal combustion engine? I don't know how I feel about that. Like, I actually think having, you know, is the infrastructure going to be in place? Does that mean my minivan is going to be all electric? Because if you know, and there's a lot of ways you could slice this up and a lot of things we don't know, not only about the future, obviously, but also about this report. But, I mean, will there be several options? All electric Mustang is on the menu. Will there be, you know, maybe the infrastructure and like just fuel economy rules and things have changed as such that really, if you want a Mustang, you're buying it for the looks, and then the all electric with the performance is baked in. And that's table stakes, par for the course, pick your cliche. That's just what we're running on. It's almost like gas right now. I kind of struggle to think we're going to get there that fast. That's 7 years from now, 8 years from now. I mean, rewind to 2013. We were doing pretty much the same thing we're doing now. Although I guess the cliche is change happens slowly and then all at once. So maybe there will be like some sort of tipping point. Broad strokes. Yeah, give me an all-electric Mustang. But I think I might also want at least have the option of a naturally aspirated 5-liter V8, potentially, you know?
Yeah.
But it also, to me, really depends on, like, how the world looks, you know? So,
yeah.
I don't know.
And also, 2028 does give them time to, I don't know, shrink the batteries to actually plop it into a smaller car and give it the combination of performance and range that people will want. Without having to make it into a larger crossover. 2028, who knows? Looking forward to it though, whatever comes. 2028's got to be better than 2020 was.
That's true. Yeah, I mean, the decade started kind of rough. We'll see if it ends with a rumble or an electric whirr under the hood of a Mustang. We'll see. That's all the time we have this week. Thanks for joining, John. It was good talking green cars and cars in general. Please send us your questions.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Yeah. Please send us your questions. Your spend my monies. Is there anything you want to spend money on, John, in particular? Any specific, I don't know.
Yeah. There's lots of stuff. There's lots of stuff I want to spend money on. Right now the first thing we're going to spend money on is a new vehicle for my wife, Kat.
Maybe we should spend your money.
The GLK that we've loved, the diesel GLK that we've loved for, you know, so many years now. We're outgrowing it, with two kids and two dogs and lots of trips to the cottage up north. We just need a little more space. So we're trying to figure out what that next vehicle is going to be. And we're getting closer to actually, you know, actively starting the buying process. So we're really looking at the Hyundai Palisade.
Nice.
You know, Kat also really liked the Volvo XC90. I would love to do the T8, but that's a little too expensive. We would probably go with, you know, like the T5. But I think, you know, just looking at value and what you get for your buck, the Hyundai Palisade looks really, really good, and I love it. I already love that car, and we'll get to learn more about it very soon here.
Good teaser, good segue. Long-term Hyundai Palisade coming up, perhaps as soon as this month or maybe next. So that is on the docket. Great value for Hyundai, that's for sure. That's a nice looking vehicle. Send us your questions if you want to hear more about John's buying process. If you'd like us to, you know, dissect your questions, spend my money. We'd like to spend your money. That's podcast@autoblog.com. Hit us up on Twitter, Facebook, all of our Autoblog social platforms. Until next week, be safe out there. We'll see you later.